This morning we're looking at Psalm 58. This is a prayer for the punishment of the wicked. And as I mentioned in the notes, this psalm would be considered by many to be very excessive and offensive today. It's these types of songs that some people would say they shouldn't even be in the Bible. This type of language, this attitude should not even be in the Bible, especially verses 6 through 8. Break their teeth, let them melt away, let them be like an untimely birth of a woman. You know, that would be considered very unkind and unloving. And if you read, commentaries and things that scholars say about the Psalms, some of them would say that this has no place in God's Word. And so, I wanted us to begin this morning by reminding us of some things about, the psalmist. This, is another imprecatory psalm. We've made mention of this word several times. It means to call down a curse upon the wicked. So break their teeth, O God. He's calling down a curse upon these wicked individuals. There's a few things that we need to be reminded of here so that we are not, taken back by this language. And I say we probably don't have any problem with it. We read it and we're okay with that. But if you were to read that to some of your friends or family, they'd be like, man, that's not right. Or coworkers, people like that. Why do you think that type of language would be considered offensive today or unkind or unloving in our society today? Why would you think that?
Because we're supposed to be
tall. Right. Nobody speaks firmly about sin and wickedness anymore. So when you hear somebody speaking firm about it, boy, you're like, man, what is that? To those who regularly read the Bible and read all of it, they're familiar with that. They're accustomed to that. And in this day and time, among the righteous, this would have been a normal thing. But in our society today, you don't hear it at home. You don't hear it at school. You don't hear it at church. You don't hear it at work. You don't hear it in your neighborhood. You don't hear it anywhere. So when you read something like that, you're like, what is that guy's problem? Well, did he, get up on the wrong side of the bed and he's having a bad day and he's just cursing all these wicked people? He's just got a big serious problem. No, he lives in a time where sin was taken very seriously. Today it's not. Do you ever hear anybody come close to this in our society? You don't hear it when you turn on the media, music, movies, book. You don't hear any scathing rebuke of sin. So it becomes very odd to us that somebody would do that, and then they turn around and have the gall to say, well, that shouldn't be in the Bible, like there's some expert on what should and should not be in the Bible. So you really do see this kind of thing going on today. So the first thing that we need to be reminded of is, and I believe I mentioned this in the applications, number 5, we need to have a holy anger against sin. And when we stop having a holy anger against sin, then we're going to start having sin in our life. We've got to, what happens is today we soften. We get soft on bad language. We get soft on alcohol or sexual immorality or immodesty or pornography or something like that. We get soft on it, and it's not really something that we just have a scathing rebuke against it, and then we find ourselves, kind of being okay with it. Well, if we wouldn't personally do it ourselves, it's okay if we're around it, and we just sort of do like that. So the psalmist had a holy anger. It's a righteous indignation against sin. That's one reason why we have this. What did Jesus do? He cleansed the temple. People were probably taken back, like, what is this guy doing in our temple, turning over tables? Who ticked him off? You know, no, it's a holy anger about sin. And Paul came down hard on sin. And so that's one reason why some people they either think that this is strange or it shouldn't even be in the Bible, because they're so accustomed to being soft on sin. And we get soft in it with our family and our friends and others. We're around it so much that we just sort of soften, you know. And the psalmist wasn't going to do that. So that's one reason why we have this. The second thing that we need to be reminded of is in verse 6, he's calling upon God to do this. This is not personal revenge. He's not saying, I'm going to break their teeth, I'm going to get them back. It's not personal vendetta. It's wanting God to do what God is going to do anyway. God is going to punish the wicked. David is not asking God to do something that God wasn't already going to do, or God didn't think about doing this. Oh yeah, I need to take care of the wicked. He's calling upon God to do what God would normally do. And so that's something else to think about. It's not a personal vendetta. It's divine vengeance. And then a third thing, and we'll look at this when we get into our lesson. I made a note on this on verse 6. I want us to read Psalm 139, 19 through 24 in a minute. That is a good passage to remind us of something that we've forgotten. And that is that if there are wicked people around us doing wicked things, and maybe they're even being our own personal enemies, we're going to read Psalm 139 in a minute. The psalmist never forgot that when he had enemies against him, they were always enemies against God. Anytime you attack a righteous person and a person who's doing right, you are attacking God. And so when you're attacking God, you're going to call down this kind of language. This is not just some bad guys out giving me a hard time. This is an attack on God himself. And that's another reason why. So number one, a holy anger towards sin, which if we're not careful, we're going to lose it in our own lives. Number two, God is the one who's doing the punishing. And number three, the psalmist never forgot that these enemies were ultimately enemies against God. That's why we have this kind of language. But like I said in the notes, it's very caustic. It's very pointed, you know, break their teeth, let them melt away, and so forth. It would be considered very excessive or offensive to many today. And some people have so much of a problem with it that they don't even think this type of thing should be in the Bible. Psalm 58, then, is a prayer for the punishment of the wicked. And verse 6 would be one of the key verses, break their teeth, O God. And that's a very harsh statement, but it is something that needs to be said. Like the other psalms that we've been looking at recently, from 54 through 59, it is an individual lament or complaint about enemies that are attacking him, wicked people, and he wants God to judge them. Let's read Psalm 58 together. Do you indeed in silence speak righteously? Do you judge uprightly, O ye sons of men? Nay, or no, in your heart you work wickedness. You weigh out the violence of your hands in the earth. The wicked are estranged from the womb. They go astray as soon as they are born, speaking lies. Their poison is like the poison of a serpent. They are like the deaf adder that stoppeth her ear, which hearkeneth not to the voice of charmers, charming never so wisely. Break their teeth, O God, in their mouth. Break out the great teeth of the young lions, O Jehovah. Let them melt away as water that runneth apace. When he aimeth his arrows, let them be as though they were cut off. Let them be as a snail which melteth and passeth away, like the untimely birth of a woman that hath not seen the sun. Wherefore your pots can feel the before your pots can feel the thorns, he will take them away with a whirlwind, the green and the burning alike. The righteous shall rejoice when he seeth the vengeance. He shall wash his feet in the blood of the wicked, so that men shall say, verily there is a reward for the righteous. Verily there is a God that judgeth in the earth. And the latter part of verse 10 would be another one of those verses where people say, that's awfully mean language. He shall wash his feet in the blood of the wicked. You know, that sounds pretty mean. So this type of psalm causes a lot of people problems. Psalm 58 is an individual lament. It is another trouble and trust psalm. He states the trouble that he's in, but he always comes around at the end to trusting in God. And so verse 10 and 11 would be those positive trust verses. God is a judge in all the earth, and he will reward the righteous. So the psalmist never loses his faith or his hope when he's going through trouble. He always comes around to expressing his trust in God. Now, in Psalm 58, we have wicked people, but there's a particular kind of wicked person here that we want to see. Look at verse 1, and I made some notes on this. The King James reads, do you indeed, O congregation? The American Standard reads, do you indeed in silence? And then the New American Standard says, do you indeed, O gods? Gods, small g. That is probably the better reading. If you take the Hebrew word there and just change one little letter, you get either congregation or silence or gods. That's why there's a variety there. It probably needs to be gods. And this is the word that is used in the Psalms to mean rulers or judges. Turn over to Psalm 82, just a minute. Psalm 82, verses 1 and 2. God standeth in the congregation of God. He judgeth among the gods. God standeth in the congregation of God. He judgeth among the gods. How long will you judge unjustly and respect the persons of the wicked? Verse 1 talks about gods. It's a word that is used a few times in the Old Testament to mean, it means mighty ones. That's why it's translated gods. Elohim is God in the Old Testament, and this is Elim, which is similar. Elohim and Elim. So it means a mighty person, a mighty one. But it's referring to judges, those who have authority to judge. And that's how it's being used here in Psalm 58. The good thing about the Psalms is if we're having trouble with the first part of a verse, the last part helps us. Look at the last part of verse 1. Psalm 58, verse 1. We're back to Psalm 58 now. Look at the last part. Even if you had trouble with the first part, look at the last part. Do you judge uprightly, O you sons of men? Well, clearly, we're talking about people who are judging. So that helps us to understand the first part of the verse. We're talking about people who are unjust judges. The wicked in this particular psalm are dishonest and unjust in their judgments. They are gods, small g, or judges, who are not judging uprightly. These are two rhetorical questions that are answered no. And look at verse 2. No. He answers it. He answers the questions that he's been asking. Do you indeed speak righteously? Do you judge uprightly? Verse 2. No. So we're talking about a particular kind of wicked person here. Dishonest and unjust judges. They have evil in their hearts and in their hands. Verse 2. They are quick to speak lies. They are poisonous and obstinate. And I say obstinate, look at verse 5, they're like an adder or a serpent who won't listen to the charmer. And so they're stubborn, they're obstinate. Because of their wickedness, the psalmist delivers several curses upon these evil men, verses 6 through 9. The psalmist knows that when the wicked, in particular these unjust judges, are punished, the righteous will rejoice, verse 10, and men will say that there indeed is a God that judges in the earth, verse 11. So, we're talking about a particular kind of wicked people, those who are unjust in their judgment. Psalm 58 is one of the strongest imprecatory psalms. Here the psalmist is more caustic in his charges against the wicked than in preceding psalms. He uses strong language that many today would consider to be excessive or offensive. Okay, let's answer our questions now. Sherry, we'll start with you. Number one, what two rhetorical questions does the psalmist ask concerning the wicked judges?
You speak righteously, you judge
uprightly. Right, and I put in the question wicked judges because of what we just discussed. This verse is talking about wicked judges, and probably the New American Standard and those that follow that language, God's, small g, is probably the better reading there because of the context. So, are they speaking righteously? No. Are they judging uprightly? No. They're rhetorical questions. And so we're talking about sons of men who are in a position to judge, but they are unjust in their judgment. They're wicked. Number two, Mason, what is the answer to the question asked in the first verse?
No,
verse two. No, that's the answer. In heart you work wickedness. You weigh out the violence of your hands in the earth. So no, you are not just in your judgment. Number three, Jake, how soon do the wicked go astray? Okay, let's look at verse 3. This is a popular verse among people who teach Calvinism. John Calvin taught total depravity, that you're born inheriting the sin of Adam and Eve, and you're born with a bent or a slant or a nature that is bent towards sin from your birth. You're born with it. And this is one verse that they use. But read it carefully. The wicked are estranged from the womb. They go astray as soon as they are born. If we didn't have the next part, you know, we may begin to think, well, maybe there's some truth to this. But it says, speaking lies. Has there ever been a baby come out of a mother's womb in the hospital and they're speaking lies? Never, ever. It's impossible. No baby has ever done that, ever. They're not even speaking, let alone speaking lies. So clearly he's doing something else. He's using a figure of speech to do something else. This is not literal. You're not literally born wicked and speaking lies. That can't happen. So it's got to be something else. And what's interesting is I was reading some comments on this verse from people who are Calvinistic, and they talk about how that you're born with this sinful nature. Look at my note on verse 3. You're born with original sin or sinful nature, or you're born totally depraved and you inherit that from Adam and Eve. But they never said a word about speaking lies. They never touched it. Why? Because they know that babies don't speak lies. So that's already been taken away from them. Their argument has already been taken away from them. They just want to focus on the first part of the verse, but not one of them say a thing about actually speaking lies. So they just ignore that part. The part that helps us understand this is talking about something else. And that's how people handle the Bible. They do it every day. They focus on the part of the verse that they want to emphasize, and they have all this theology built around it, and they ignore the other part of the verse that would answer their theology. It's very common today. But I noticed how often that was done, because I knew that, you know, Calvinists used this verse. So I was just interested, you know, you just get the most of the commentaries that, you know, are sold today are Calvinistic, and they all make the same point. You know, we're born wicked, but they won't touch top side or bottom of that statement, speaking lies, because they know that babies don't speak lies. So they just ignore that part. This is not proof that we are born with some sinful nature. It is literally impossible for an infant to speak lies. So that should let us know that the psalmist is trying to do something else. And what it is the figure of speech hyperbole, where you are speaking in exaggeration to make a point. He wants to show how quickly in life these wicked judges go astray. How soon and how quickly they go astray. And this is his way of doing it. Okay? So, it's as if, not literally, but it's as if they started it the day they were born, speaking lies. How soon some people can engage in wickedness and go astray from God in their life. And it seems like today the age is dropping. It used to be you lost your innocence, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old. Back in the old days, that's when you lost your innocence. Boy, there's kindergartners and preschoolers that are cussing. They cuss like a sailor. Eric knows about that from kids that get on his bus. So, yeah, it's getting younger and younger, but we're not born with an inherited depravity. But the more our young people are surrounded by that in our society, it is younger and younger that they're doing bad things. Eric, number four, what are the wicked compared to? Right, so they're like a serpent with a poisonous tongue. They're also stubborn and obstinate. They won't listen, just like there's some of the cobras that wouldn't listen to the charmers. I think this is the only time in the Old Testament where this idea of charmer is used. So apparently even in Bible times there were those, you know, you've seen those pictures of the guy in India. They put the cobra in the basket and they take the lid off and the cobra comes up and he's playing his little flute, you know, and the cobra's swaying back and forth. Apparently some of that was being done, you know, in David's day. But they won't listen, so that it's also the idea of stubborn. Number five, Mike, what does the psalmist want God to do to the wicked? Right. Let's go ahead and take the next one because it goes along with it. What four things are the wicked compared to? Janice? Okay. So look at all of this together. Break their teeth, and that would be like rendering them harm. If you break a lion's teeth, you're taking away his power and his harm. So take away their harm. Break their teeth. Let them melt away as water that runneth away. As it goes off, it dissipates. When he aims his arrows, let them be as though they were cut off, so the arrows aren't going to work. A snail which melteth and passeth away. Some think that it might be talking about, you know, when a snail goes along, it leaves that slimy stuff underneath of it, and it kind of looks like it's just going away there. And then the untimely birth of a woman that hath not seen the sun. Janice, did you say a stubborn child? Was that from some particular version? This is talking about like a stillborn child, someone who's not...
Mine says like... I'm sorry, stillborn.
Yeah, that's fine. So, yeah, no, that's fine. I was wondering if that was a particular version that mentioned, because you never know. But, right, a stillbirth. You know, they died before they were even born, or born dead. So these are very serious curses. You know, let them. So he's calling down divine judgment upon them. And we've already talked about why all of that is going on. But I would like to turn now. Let's look at Psalm 139. We're talking about wicked and unjust rulers in particular. And the psalmist wants them to be judged. I made a note that the strong language used in this verse and those that follow show the psalmist's righteous indignation against the Lord's enemies. This is a good reminder here that when David, if he's the psalmist, when they are attacking the king, they're attacking God's representative. They are the Lord's enemies. And that's something that we forget about. When wicked people are doing wicked things today, it's not just, we talk about, America has been attacked. Well, okay, we have, that's true. But these people are the Lord's enemies. They're attacking God. Okay? They're attacking what He stands for. Look at Psalm 139. This is the great psalm about the omnipresence of God, how that He sees us everywhere. But when you come on down toward the end of the chapter, there's judgment on the wicked. Look at Psalm 139, verse 19. Surely thou wilt slay the wicked, O God. Depart from me, therefore, you bloodthirsty men. For they speak against thee wickedly, and thine enemies take thy name in vain. Look at that. David realized that these are not just wicked people out, you know, attacking me or my fellow man. They are enemies of God. Look at verse 21. Do not I hate them, O Jehovah, that hate thee. See, that's the key. Righteous indignation comes from realizing that wicked people today, they're in attack against God. And I hate those who hate God. And we need to remember that. This is ultimately an offense against God. I hate them, O Jehovah, that hate thee. I am not grieved with those that rise up against. Am I not grieved with those that rise up against thee? They are enemies of God. I hate them with perfect hatred. What is that? What is perfect hatred? In this context, we would call it righteous indignation against sin. And that's what we're losing in our world. They are become mine enemies. So, yes, they attack me, but ultimately they are against God. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts. And see if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way of everlasting. Look at verse 23 and 24. If David was slumping into a personal vendetta and petty revenge, then he would be wicked himself. But verse 23 and 24, he's not. This is not petty revenge. He's good inside and right inside, and ask God, search, see if there's any wickedness in me. This is pure righteous indignation against those who ultimately are enemies of God and who, verse 21, hate God. All the wickedness going on in the world are people who hate God. They don't want God in their life. And that's why we have such a indignation against that. So hopefully, those types of things would help a person understand this needs to stay in the Bible. We don't need to tear it out of the Bible because that's just terrible language that he's using. They don't even understand the background of some of these things. They just know that, oh, that's a bunch of mean words. We don't need that today. No, understand what is going on, and hopefully that'll help you to understand why this is the type of language it is. Okay, number 7, Larry, what does God do with the wicked, and how soon does he do it? Right, he will take them away. He, God, not me. It's not a personal vendetta. God's going to judge them, and he's going to do it before the pot can get warm sitting on top of the thorns in that day. Thorns were used as fuel to get the cooking pot going. And before that can get going, God's going to take them away. Number eight, Mandy, what do the righteous do when the wicked are punished by God? Right. And again, especially the latter part, well, both parts really, appear to be vindictive or appear to be shallow, where you have the righteous jumping up and down having a party that the wicked are getting punished, and then wash your feet in their blood. That seems a little, out of, untasteful and that type of thing. But look at verse 10. When he seeth the vengeance, this is God's judgment on them. The righteous are not jumping up and down because of their own personal vendetta, and not because the wicked are punished per se. It's because God is vindicating himself. He is using his vengeance to judge these people. So this is not personal vengeance, but divine vengeance. I wanted to look at a couple of things. Let's look at a few of these verses. Psalm 99, verse 8. Psalm 99, verse 8. Thou answerest them, O Jehovah our God. Thou wast a God that forgavest them, though thou tookest vengeance on their doings. God takes vengeance on those who do not live right. We don't. God does. Psalm 94, 1. O Jehovah, thou God to whom vengeance belongeth, thou God to whom vengeance belongeth, shine forth. Lift up thyself, thou judge of the earth. Render to the proud their desert, or what they deserve. So God is doing this. And David would have been, coming from that standpoint. Look at Psalm 18 with me. Psalm 18, verse 47. I'm laboring on this point in case you're ever talking with someone about the Psalms, at work or somewhere else, and they bring this point up that I was reading the Psalms the other day, and the guy was, he was all mad and being mean about people, and, it might come up, and you need to be able to explain that to them. Psalm 18, verse 47, even the God that executeth vengeance for me and subdueth peoples under me. So it's God that is doing this. And then turn with me to 2 Samuel 22. When you get down toward the end of 2 Samuel, this is where we find that David is called the sweet psalmist of Israel in 2 Samuel 23 and verse 1. He's called the sweet psalmist of Israel. And in 2 Samuel 22, toward the end of his life, this is actually one of David's psalms in the historical record there of 2 Samuel. And look at 2 Samuel 22:48. Jehovah is my rock, verse 47, the rock of my salvation, even the God that executeth vengeance for me and that bringeth down peoples under me. So he recognized that God is executing vengeance for him, and he always keeps it focused on that. Okay, Matthew, number 9. What two things do men say when the wicked are punished by God? Okay. So one of the benefits of divine judgment is that people in general, they see two things. Number one, they see that there is a reward for the righteous. It does pay to be a good person. And people in general in the world see that. And the other thing they see is that there is a God that judgeth in the earth. And I believe sometimes these big events that go on in the world and how the wicked are brought down by them. I believe even some today still recognize that God judges in the earth. We're going to sing in just a minute some of these sentiments. But just real quickly, we don't have time to look at all of these applications. We'll look at a few of them. Did you get number one, Scott? How are rulers to lead? Okay. Sherry, number one. How are rulers to lead?
By the law, not drunk, judge righteously, before.
Right. There's several things there. One that goes along with our lesson is that they are to judge righteously. They're not to judge unjustly like those in verse 1. What are Christians to do, Mason?
To pray for all men and give thanks to those, and to give prayer for those in authority.
Yeah, we need to be praying for our judges, our Supreme Court. Sometimes they just have it wrong. I'm sorry. They've got it wrong. When you look at God's Word, they've got it wrong. And pray for our judges, local, state, our Supreme Court. We've got to keep doing that. Number two, Jake, how are we to keep our heart and our hands?
James 4:8 says, clean your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, and double-minded. And similar thought.
Right. So what is on our heart is going to be executed in our hands. So we have to keep our heart pure, and then our hands will be pure. Eric, number three, what is the spiritual condition of man when he is born, and what does he do later in life?
Who is that have found that God made man upright, but they have sought out many kings?
Right, each of us are born upright, just like Adam and Eve. Each of us are born upright, and then later we seek out many schemes and problems, but we're not born with it. And we're not doing it later in life because we were born with an inclination to do it, a tainted nature, sinful nature, original sin, total depravity, all these terms that man uses in their theology. It's not in God's Word. Mike, what is the devil like?
A snake, a roaring lion.
Right. The two things that are used here of these wicked judges, serpents and lions, the same thing is used of the devil, who's our enemy. So we have to be very careful about that. He is on the prowl. He's wily. He's deceitful. He's ferocious. And we don't need to underestimate him. I think some people, I think they underestimate the power of the devil. They're kind of like, well, he's no big deal. But he's described in a very ferocious way in Scripture, and we need to be on guard. And then, Janice, what attitude are Christians to have toward evil? Right. Abhor it. Abstain from it. Abhor. Do we abhor evil? That's stronger than just, you know, dislike evil. Abhor it. And we'll have a better attitude toward it. And then last of all, Larry, how do Paul and John describe the judgments of God? Yeah, his judgments are always true, right, just, fair, according to truth. There's no unjust judgment with God. And so one thing I wanted us to notice in this psalm is, look at verse 1 and verse 11. Verse 1 are people who judge unjustly, and verse 11, God judges righteously or justly. He's never unjust in his judgment. So there's a contrast between man in verse 1, who's an unjust judge, and God in verse 11, who is a just and righteous judge. And so when we see all kinds of foolishness going on in the world today, we know man is not going to judge that rightly, but God will. And we can have our trust in him with that. Let's sing a few verses of Psalm 58 to the tune of I Sing the Mighty Power of God. (Clears throat) You may be God, but can you claim that you speak righteousness? And do you judge the sons of men in truth and uprightness? No, even in your very heart you wickedness produce. On earth you weigh out with your hands your violent abuse. The wicked from their day of birth are strangers to the way. They from the womb come speaking lies. They wander far away. They have the venom of a snake. They have an adder's ear, which they have closed to charmers' songs. Skilled charmers they'll not hear. O God, inside their open mouths, break off their cruel teeth. The fangs of these young lions, Lord, tear out by roots beneath. Let them like runoff waters be that leave the ground soon dry. Let arrows that he aims become like headless shafts that fly. Let them be like the snails that melt along the course they run, or like one prematurely born who never sees the sun. They are like blazing thorns which you beneath your kettles lay, whose heat is scarcely felt before a wind sweeps them away. The just rejoices when he sees that vengeance is complete. For in the blood of wicked men he then will wash his feet. They'll say there surely is reward for righteous ones of worth. There surely is a living God who judges in the earth.